If you shop at Amazon and would like to support this podcast, please go to our website, MysteriousTopics.com, first and click on our link to Amazon, and then do your shopping, and we will get a little credit for that, and we would appreciate that very much. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mysterious Topics Podcast. This is John, and I am joined again by co-host Charlotte Lily Anderson from Australia. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, John.
And you wanted to talk about the Winchester Mystery Mansion today.
Yes, I did. It's a real fascinating topic, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I've known about it for a while, and when you emailed me about it, I was thinking, well, yeah, it's an interesting story. I don't know how much there is there, but in researching it, it's one of those topics that Chuck and I noticed many times in doing the podcast, how you think there's just a certain amount there, and then you uncover a whole lot more, so it should make for a real fun topic.
Very much so.
So how did you find out about it and decide that you wanted to find out more?
Well, it's a quite well-known topic, I think, all around the world. In Australia, there's a lot of references to it, even in our television shows, and it's quite big in pop culture. And it's almost a ghost story that most people tell at campfires, even here, which I'd assume would probably be around the same in America.
Yeah, the story is pretty much that, where it's some crazy widow that had a lot of money and was thinking that she was being tormented by ghosts, so she consulted a psychic, and the psychic told her to move out west and continually build a house to appease the spirits, otherwise they were going to get her too. And that's the main story that I have heard and thought was pretty much the whole story up until just recently.
Oh, yeah, it's at face first value, it seems pretty shallow and almost crazy, but there's a lot once you get into it that's really fascinating.
Yeah, well, so why don't we start with just a little background about Sarah Winchester, first of all. Her birth name was Sarah Lockwood Pardee. She was the fifth of seven children born to Leonard Pardee and Sarah Burns. And it's of note that there are no existing records or any other form of factual information to establish her actual birth date. Even the year isn't known. But the historical records indicates that her birth must have occurred somewhere between 1835 and 1845.
The Winchester Mystery Mansion says that it was probably 1840.
Yeah, they kind of peg it right in between those two dates. And as we'll find out here, they should be able to pin it down to that, because she was going to school in New Haven with some people who were about that age. So they kind of assume that's what she was. But at the time of her birth, the Pardees were a respectable upper middle class New Haven family. Her father, Leonard, was a joiner, which is a carpenter by trade, whose shrewd sense of business found him moving up the ladder of polite society as a successful carriage manufacturer. And later, during the Civil War, he made a fortune supplying ambulances to the Union Army. And at the same time, the Winchesters were living in New Haven, Connecticut, and they most likely they knew each other. They were well acquainted. They both went to the New Haven's First Baptist Church. And additionally, Sarah and William's sister, Annie, were classmates.
Huh. That's really cool.
Yeah, so they did. They had a connection there. They would have been well acquainted through church and other activities. And so then Sarah and William Wirt Winchester, the son of Oliver Fisher Winchester, who was the lieutenant governor of Connecticut and manufacturer of the famous Winchester repeating rifle, were married on September 30th, 1862. Their only child, Annie Pardee Winchester, was born on July 12th, 1866, unfortunately due to an infantile disease known as marasmus, a severe form of malnutrition due to the body's inability to metabolize proteins. Annie died only 40 days after her birth. Then in 1880, Oliver Fisher Winchester died, leaving the succession of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company to his only son. 1 year later, that son, William, died of tuberculosis at the age of 43. Very, very young at any time. The double loss of Annie and William was a staggering blow to Sarah. However, the loss did leave the widow Winchester with an inheritance of $20 million plus nearly 50% of the Winchester Arms stock, which in turn earned her approximately an additional $1,000 per day in royalties for the rest of her life, the result of which made her one of the wealthiest women in the world. Now, just a real quick, in today's dollars, that $1,000 a day in royalties that she was making in 1881 would equal $22,176 in dollars today. That's American dollars. And $20 million in 1881 would be the equivalent of almost $450 million. That's nearly a half billion, of course. And that's, you know, with another $22,000 per day coming in, and that's not even counting the interest on that $20 million. So she had much more money than she could probably ever spend at that point.
Yeah, that is quite a bit of money.
So, well, okay, why don't you tell us a little bit about the story, the traditional story now, as far as her and the Winchester Mansion.
Okay, so after her husband's death, she was riddled with grief, so she sought many spiritualists in order to make peace and contact her family. It was only after meeting a prominent Boston medium did her story really start to unfold. He told her that she needed to move to the West and continue to build a house forever. This would both appease the spirits who were killed by the Winchester rifle and grant her immortality. After this, she continued to build for 36 years, creating the famous Winchester Mansion. The Winchester Mansion is in San Jose, California, USA. The original house was built, was an 8-bedroom house, and it was built between 1884 and 1922. Over 78,000 liters of paint were used, and in the end, 161 rooms, a few being newly discovered, including 40 bedrooms, 2 ballrooms, 47 fireplaces, over 10,000 panels of glass, 17 chimneys, 47 stairways, 6 kitchens, 2 basements, and 3 elevators. The original property is over 162 acres, which is around 66 hectares. There were many revolutionary systems in the house, such as steam and forced air heating, modern indoor toilets and plumbing, push-button gas lights, and Mrs. Winchester's personal hot shower. There was a famous seance room, or the Blue Room, where she supposedly had nightly interactions with spirits. Now, it is estimated that over 500 rooms to 600 rooms were built, but because so many were redone, only 160 remain. That's a general overview of the house,
okay,
along with some fun facts. Oh, the Blue Room, which is the seance room, had 3 doors, only one of which could be used. One leads to a 3-meter drop into the kitchen.
Yeah, that's quite a jump down to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Now, that room, curiously enough, is in the exact center of the house. And as the traditional story says, that she would carry on seances. Apparently, she had some sort of bell that she would ring at midnight to alert the spirits that she was going to be having a seance, and then she'd ring it again at 2 a.m. when she was finished, apparently.
Yeah.
So that is the story of how she came to start building this incredible mansion. There are some other, just to give you an idea, as we said, how much money she had, there's a lot of stained glass, and some of it was not even installed. They found it in the attic. All the stained glass was made by Tiffany, which at that time and even today is some of the most expensive. And some of it was designed by her and some of it was designed by Tiffany himself. So it's finding that in the attic nowadays at this point would make it worth quite a big sum of money.
Most definitely. She also had gold and silver chandeliers all around the house.
Yes, and all there was inlaid woodwork, and it was everything was of the finest quality, and as you said, very technologically advanced, like all of the, as you said, the push button gas lanterns and the elevators, and just all kinds of modern advances for that time.
Very much so, which actually ties into one of the theories that probably will be discussed later on.
Yes. And she had a lot of quirky things while she was working there. She is believed to have been the first builder to use wool insulation. And the Winchester Mansion was practically a small town unto itself. The Winchester estate was virtually self-sufficient, with its own carpenter and plumber's workshops, along with an on-premise water and electrical supply, and a sewer drainage system.
Wow.
Yes, they had. It was basically, like, as it said, a small town unto itself. When news of Mrs. Winchester's death on September 5th, 1922 came, her workers halted construction immediately, leaving nails half-driven into the walls. In accordance with her 12-page, 13-part will, curiously enough signed by her 13 times, Sarah had her entire estate divided up in generous portions to be distributed among a number of charities and those people who had faithfully spent years in her service. Her favorite niece and secretary, Marion Marriott, oversaw the removal of the sale of all of Sarah's furnishings and personal property. Roy Lieb, Mrs. Winchester's attorney of many years, had been named in her will as an executor to her estate. She sold the house to the people who, in 1933, preserved it as a living museum. Today it is known as the Winchester Mystery House, also known as California Historical Landmark number 868. Although no mention has ever surfaced as to any specific guidelines or special instructions by which Mr. Lieb would select a buyer for the property, one gets the distinct impression that Sarah wanted the house to stand intact and perpetually preserved, as it does today.
Yeah, one of the first ever renters or leased owners was Mame and John Brown, who were actually friends of her niece.
Yes, I think they lived in it for a time anyway. Now, we should talk a little bit about some of the oddities of the building, because it wasn't just that it was a very fabulous mansion, but there were quite a few oddities. For instance, the staircases that go up to the ceiling. There's some windows that are in the floor.
Yeah.
And are there any other ones that you can think of that...
Yes, there's a two-story drop from a window, from a door that leads to the outside of the house.
Yes.
They've got ceiling props that don't actually reach the top of the roof, chimneys that stop short of the roof, doors that open into walls, stairs that just lead to ceilings. It's interesting.
Yes, yeah. And there's also a staircase that... it winds back and forth, and it's at a very small incline, so you go back and forth and back and forth. The steps are only a couple inches high, each one.
Yeah, there's like 180 steps, and it's like a 3-meter distance to go up.
Yeah, it's very, very odd, and that was the story why she was just a rich widow with some emotional issues, and she thought that because the Winchesters were dying, and now her baby, that died 40 days after birth, that was 14 years later was when her father-in-law died, and 15 years later when her husband died. So it wasn't like they all died in succession. And for this story to come about that she was feeling that the spirits were punishing the Winchesters because they created another technological advancement of the time, the Winchester rifle, that was highly sophisticated for that time, that all the people, all the ghosts of the people that were killed by that rifle were haunting the Winchesters, and that's pretty much how that played out. And when you suggested this story to me, that's pretty much where I thought we'd end, and we'd just discuss the peculiar attributes of the house and the surrounding area. But I happened to find in researching a website, it's at thetruthaboutthewinchesterhouse.com. This is by Richard Allen Wagner, who himself was doing research on Sarah Winchester. And when he started, he was doing the same thing. And I think he started about 15 years ago. He was just going to do the same thing that we were going to do, just talk about the Winchester Mansion. And he found quite a remarkable story that we'll start talking about now.
Yeah, cool. Would you like to present that theory?
Yeah, I'll start. I'll just read a little bit here. He tells about the spiritualist folklore about Sarah Winchester's life is primarily the creation of the people who acquired Sarah Winchester's mansion following her death. At that time, information regarding Mrs. Winchester's spiritual and philosophical views were unknown. However, the question remained, why did she build such a remarkably strange house? In order to bring in tourist dollars, the enterprise known as the Winchester Mystery House had little choice but to invent a story that would fill in the blank pages of her life and make it alluring to the public and profitable for the Winchester Mystery House enterprise. Mrs. Winchester's closest friend, Henrietta Sievers, specifically testified that the late builder of the mansion was neither a spiritualist nor did she conduct seances, which further begs the question, if Mrs. Winchester didn't build her mansion to appease angry spirits, what was her real purpose for creating such a strange house? What were her real intentions and motives? The evidence, both historical and archaeological, shows that Sarah Winchester strongly identified with the great genius Francis Bacon and very likely saw herself as the reincarnation of Bacon, the details of which are specifically demonstrated in Bacon's symbols and numeric cipher code lavishly displayed throughout Mrs. Winchester's grand ballroom, particularly the Shakespearean windows. Now, it's going to be very hard for us to go through all of this information because there's so much here, but I would encourage people to go to thetruthaboutthewinchesterhouse.com and you can go through a lot. He has images of these Shakespearean windows that you can look at. He's even got an ebook which is titled The Lost Secret of William Shakespeare. And anybody interested in this, I would encourage you to go to that website and click on the link, The Lost Secret of William Shakespeare, and get the ebook because it is absolutely free. You can download it for free. So it's well worth going through this if you're at all interested in mysteries such as we are. So continuing on here, like Bacon, Sarah Winchester was a Rosicrucian and a Freemason. And apparently they did have a few women Freemason at the time, although at the time they supposedly weren't allowed. But in his research, he found that there were some. The house she built is overflowing with Rosicrucian and Masonic symbolism. For example, the so-called seance room, located in the precise center of the house, was actually Mrs. Winchester's Rosicrucian Sanctum, which is a special place where Rosicrucians typically practice meditation and study at or near the center of their homes. And I should mention that this author that did all this research, Richard Allen Wagner, is also a Rosicrucian and a Freemason. So I'm pretty sure he knows all about this.
That's pretty cool.
Now, this is where it gets interesting, because according to author Ralph Rambo, Sarah went on a 3-year world tour before settling in California in 1884. The New Haven Register, dated 1886, lists Sarah as having been removed to Europe. No other information has survived to tell us exactly where Mrs. Winchester went during those years or what her activities consisted of. But, you know, and he's going to go on to suggest where she might have visited some things. But I just want to say right now, if that story that she met the psychic and he, because she was worried about the spirits and he told her she had to go and start building a house and not stop out west, I would think she would have done that right away instead of waiting 3 years. And here we know, we now find out that she indeed did have a 3-year gap where she was said to have gone to Europe.
Well as months at a time where she stopped building.
Yeah, so it kind of shoots down that theory a little bit. And so anyway, he goes on to say about the women in Freemasonry, although Freemasonry has traditionally barred women from its membership, there are numerous documented cases in which some headstrong women have gained admittance to liberal Masonic lodges as far back as the 18th century. A movement in France called co-Freemasonry, which allows for male and female membership, was already underway when Sarah arrived in that country. Given her social status, a predilection towards Freemasonic tenets, and a mastery of the European languages, Sarah could easily have been admitted into any of the permissive French Masonic lodges. And she was fluent in 5 different languages, including Latin, I think it was French, Spanish, I can't remember.
I think German.
Yeah. But that's that in itself is incredible. I can barely master one, and she did, and we'll find out later that somebody else was very much like that too. Another possible scenario involving Mrs. Winchester's activities while abroad could well have included visits to esoteric architectural landmarks such as the French Cathedral of Chartres. Sarah's Masonic Rosicrucian interest in labyrinths would have drawn her to the Chartres with its 11-circuit labyrinth, a puzzle-like feature that stresses the discipline of an initiatic tradition of the ancient mystery schools. Likewise, she would also have found inspiration in the Freemason symbology at the mysterious structure, including a staircase that leads to nowhere, of the Roslyn Chapel in Scotland. So what he's putting together, a story here of where during her 3-year trip to Europe, she was gaining more knowledge in this area of mysterious ancient mystery schools. And at some point she would go to San Jose and start recreating her own, taking little bits of all these different buildings that she toured. Now, in 1884, Sarah took up residence in the San Francisco Bay Area, eventually moving inland to Santa Clara Valley, which is now San Jose, to buy an 8-room farmhouse from Dr. Robert Caldwell. Her apparent motive for the move was to live in close proximity to her numerous Pardee relatives, most of whom had come to California during the 1849 gold rush and were scattered from Sacramento to the Bay Area. One of these Pardee relatives, Enoch H. Pardee, had become a highly respected physician and politician while living in Oakland. Later, his son, George C. Pardee, followed in his father's footsteps, rising to the office of governor of California. So she didn't just head out west because a psychic told her to. She ended up there after touring Europe for 3 years because she had a lot of relatives living there.
Yeah. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So when you suggested this topic, I'm sure you didn't think that all of this was going to be coming up, but did you ever hear of or know anything about the Rosicrucians or Freemasonry or any of that?
Well, I didn't know about Sarah Winchester's involvement, but I know a little bit from, you know, the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons and just a little bit of research on the side, but that's kind of cool that she had such an involvement with them.
Yeah, and we've never done, we did a podcast on the Knights Templar, Chuck and I, but we never, I don't think we did one on Freemasonry or the other ones. But so these are all, I guess, ancient philosophies. Yeah, I'll give a description here. I have one of Rosicrucianism, which is a philosophical secret society said to have been founded in late medieval Germany by Christian Rosenkreuz. It holds a doctrine or theology built on esoteric truths of the ancient past, which, concealed from the average man, provide insight into nature, the physical universe, and the spiritual realm. And from that, Freemasonry. Now, there's a long story here. Maybe I'll just briefly say that it was supposedly started by this Rosenkreuz, who was in the 1400s. He died in 1484, but according to a lesser known legend found in Masonic literature, the Rosicrucian order was created in year 46 when an Alexandrian Gnostic sage named Ormus and his six followers were converted by one of Jesus' disciples, Mark. From this conversion, Rosicrucianism was born by fusing early Christianity with Egyptian mysteries. By this account, rather than being its founder, the Rosenkreuz would have just been an initiate at that time. So these orders go way, way back, and Freemasonry, they're all similar. They're all getting their information from the same area, and there's one that goes back even further called Hermeticism, which is a religious, philosophical, and esoteric tradition based primarily upon writings attributed to Hermes. And these writings have greatly influenced the Western esoteric tradition and were considered to be of great importance both during the Renaissance and the Reformation. The tradition claims descent from a theologia, a doctrine that affirms the existence of a single true theology that is present in all religions and was given by God to man in antiquity. So all of these ideas were in the spiritual, they had to do with sort of a natural order of spiritualism. And the reason I think that they're all secret societies back then and now was because when organized religion started deciding on what they were going to have in their doctrine, and much of what was in these was not allowed in organized religion, and so they had to be secretive or they would be persecuted. So that's kind of like how all of these orders came about, as being secretive.
I don't really think that they're still around now as such, because, you know, what they were based on was things that were hindered from learning, and now we're such an open society that you can just do whatever we want, really, with knowledge and expand and teach, and we're quite tolerant in many ways.
Yeah.
That allows, you know, us not to be persecuted too much.
Right. I would agree with that. I think what has happened with some of those, particularly the Freemasonry, is that they still are, I mean, they're, you can go to just about any city here in America, at least, and I know in Scotland and England there's many Freemason buildings, but they're not out there telling everybody what they're doing. So they've kind of turned their secretive society into something that's, they're doing business dealings, let's just say. It's secretive as to what exactly they're doing, but yes, it's not, like you said, they're not hiding because they would be persecuted necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay, so now he goes on to explain some of the examples of the Masonic connection that are at the mansion. In the front, the wrought iron gates, whose Masonic symbolism represents the gilding path of self-initiation and leading directly through the twin Masonic pillars, is the so-called switchback staircase, which literally doubles Masonically as the winding staircase and Jacob's ladder. And then there is the 7-Eleven staircase, representing the Masonic fork in the road. Also, patterns in the architectural fabric of Mrs. Winchester's house reveal an emphasis on certain Kabbalistic numbers utilized by Francis Bacon and his mentor John Dee. These are the same numbers emphasized by the Rosicrucians and Freemasons and Shakespeare. 13 is the most significant of these numbers, as it is the most important prime number in the famous Fibonacci sequence. It is also the code number for the names Sarah Pardee Winchester and Shakespeare. Now, this is getting into numerology, and, you know, like, there's so many different areas that this goes into that it does get, we are heading down a rabbit hole, so we'll try to just be brief on this. And as I said, people can go to the website and look into it even further. Sarah Winchester made extensive use of encryption techniques devised by Dee and Bacon. And Richard Allen Wagner says that the Winchester House is an intricate puzzle of coded messages implemented to guide the adventurer on a trail of discovery. And there's just much more examples of that. But one of the other features I found interesting, when you look at the house with the staircases and heading up into the ceiling, and there's some pillars apparently that are upside down. Around this same time, do you know anything about M.C. Escher and some of his drawings?
Yeah, he focused on the essential properties of a fourth dimension and a spatial dimension, which has to do with, you know, the curvature of space, and that there is more than the directions that we think, and that they can be moved in other pocket dimensions, or those kind of thoughts and processes.
Yes, and he was at that time making these famous drawings that we see today, and people, you know, they can Google that and look at some of his images. But he had those famous drawings of staircases going in all different directions, which would be physically impossible, and people walking up and down, and people sideways and upside down, and they're famous drawings. But that is something else that could have very much influenced Sarah Winchester at the time.
Yeah.
And he was dabbling in the same information at the same time. So she was apparently, according to Wagner, that there was some connection there.
Which is quite interesting, as it's a little bit like Einstein's theory of general relativity and, you know, space-time and the way things move and dimensions and a lot of physics kind of theories that, you know, weren't really thought of and are still kind of questioned and not really understood.
Yeah, and it's interesting that she was able to have some of these to kind of show some of these dimensional oddities with physically in the house. Apparently, she had a display of large doors that, from a three-dimensional perspective, lead to a ridiculously small space, and small doors or cupboards that lead to an enormously large space. It's almost like Alice in Wonderland kind of odd things.
Very much so.
And so anyway, he claims that Mrs. Winchester was clearly a misunderstood genius and far ahead of her time. And he goes on to say that Francis Bacon and Sarah Winchester both understood that the only way to reveal all that nature conceals is through the transcendental science of numbers. Therefore, following her loss of Annie and William, Sarah began to write not with words as Bacon had, but truer to the Vitruvian tradition, she chose to speak to us in the pure language of numbers and architecture over a backdrop of concealment. Like Rosalind Chapel, the Winchester House serves as a higher dimensional puzzle in order to discover its underlying meaning. One must follow the path of the initiate. To that end, Sarah carefully crafted Masonic and Rosicrucian features into the structure of her labyrinth house. Her concept of initiation closely parallels the Masonic and Rosicrucian method of subjecting the initiate to a series of progressive steps or degrees in which he is forced to develop his powers of intuition and insight. And that's in the Masonic temple. They have degrees, and that's basically what he's talking about there. So I don't know. It's just all fascinating to know that for all these years, the story was, and people were led to believe, and there was no way anyone would have figured this out, that she was just a crazy widow with way too much money and was just building this because she was afraid of some spirits, when actually she was a very intelligent woman, and she went to great lengths to come up with this plan of building this remarkable house with clues that if you were smart enough, and Richard Allen Wagner seems to have been the only one so far to actually figure it out, because he is a Rosicrucian and a Freemason, that's probably the only reason he could do it.
Well, I think a lot of people were probably just looking for really basic answers to it, almost like, because a society today still thinks, you know, a lot of women not as intelligent as men, so they could have had the idea that maybe she wasn't as smart to create such a labyrinth of maths and just logic. And there are many theories, from that she was interested in architecture to just trying to keep her mind off grief, that really don't go into the depth of why she did everything that she did, which is why I think, you know, the Freemason theory is probably the best out there.
Yes, and there's just one other part I wanted to talk about. It's when she was going to school at that time, when she was in school with, there were two sisters. Let me see if I can find this here. I know it's in here somewhere, and I forgot where I put it. I was jumping back and forth.
Oh, Susan and Rebecca Bacon were the daughters of New Haven's highly respected Reverend Dr. Leonard Woolsey Bacon?
Yes. Yeah, and then the two girls that she went to school with, their last name was Bacon. They weren't related at all to Francis Bacon, but I believe it was their aunt. Was it Delia?
Yes.
And what did she do?
She attracted considerable fame and attention for writing her famous treatise that Sir Francis Bacon was actually the author, editor, and publisher of the original works of Shakespeare.
Yes.
Oh, and was supported by Ralph Waldo Emerson and Mark Twain. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, at the time. So she wrote a treatise on this theory of hers, that Francis Bacon was actually the author of Shakespeare, with some help from some other dignitaries at the time. And she was supported, as you said, by some very famous people who had their suspicions all along that something was up, too. And people that would know of, Mark Twain, another great author, and he was suspicious of that. So it gives credence to it. So all of this was happening when Sarah was a young girl going to school there in New Haven. So she would have been well aware of all of this, and obviously, it piqued her interest in Francis Bacon and Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism, both of which Bacon was very much involved with. So it does make it interesting. And so here's the other part that makes this just fascinating. When you suggested this topic, and I thought, well, we won't have much to talk about, but I don't know if you've been listening to our coverage, and my coverage along with Jordan from the Nighttime Podcast of Oak Island. One of the theories there is that what may have been hidden, what may have been buried deep down there, was just that evidence that was proving that Sir Francis Bacon was actually the author of Shakespeare. And so here it is coming up in another completely unrelated topic, which ties it back to that. I just find all this really unbelievable.
Yeah, the interconnectedness of everything.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty much the story. And as I said, there is much more evidence, and as I said, you can download an entire ebook for free to read much more about this. It's like 338 pages or something, but free is a pretty good price if you're interested.
Can't go wrong with something that's free.
Yes. So, is there anything else that you wanted to mention about this?
I would just like to add that in 1906, there was a major earthquake that destroyed most of the house, and she became trapped for hours. It wasn't until some servants came to give her a meal that they found her. Sarah did make a full recovery, but for a couple of years, she actually lived on a houseboat off the coast of California, with the house stopping to be the building of the house stopping. She actually saw this, some people believe, if you go along with the idea of ghosts or spirits, that this was an entrapment, punishment for living lavishly. And eventually, after 4 or 5 years, she moved back to the house.
Oh, well, that's really interesting. I did not know that. I didn't find that. But yeah, isn't that something how they say that was a punishment for living lavishly when earthquakes happen quite often in California, whether you're rich or poor.
Yeah. And I got that off a 1965 documentary by, I think, Lillian... Oh, I don't know her last name, but it was a really fascinating documentary.
Yeah, well, cool. If you have a link to it, you can send it to me, and I can put it on the show notes.
Cool.
And there's other things we could have talked about as far as her dealings at the house, but really, that's all, in my mind, knowing what I know now, a lot of that story was simply fabricated to make the house an attraction. So I didn't, and I think she was a lot more intelligent person than they make her out to be. And I think I just wanted to focus more on her, what Richard Allen Wagner discovered about her as a person, as opposed to the story of her being some crazy widow.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
I actually think that they should probably put that on their website. I think a lot more people would come to visit it if it was a Freemason landmark with hidden clues and puzzles. It would attract a wider community.
Well, yeah, well, I think the exact same thing, that it would be much more interesting to me to go there knowing that it was a puzzle for you to try to figure out than just some crazy house that was built to appease spirits. But you're right, that would be much more exciting to go see, but you'd first have to know, you'd have to do a little research first and find out more information about Rosicrucianism and Freemasonry in order to be able to solve the puzzle.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's a great point, Charlotte. So, anything else?
I would just like to say that I think, while she may have been a Freemason, there's probably, I don't know, I like to think that, you know, there's like more than one thing going on, just because I think it creates a much larger picture and kind of gives you to everyone's kind of theories, such as the taking her mind off the grief. She always had something to do rather than focusing on her daughter and husband, or that she was interested in architecture, a theory by Mary Jo Ignoffo, a historian. That's a really in-depth theory that I reckon anyone who's interested in the Winchester Mansion should definitely check out.
Yeah, okay. Well, definitely send me that link, too.
Yeah.
And I think that there was much more to her, and it's not just the fact that she knew about Rosicrucianism and that. It was her entire upbringing in New Haven and just the fact that her schoolmate's aunt had done that treatise on Francis Bacon, and it just all put it together. Now, Sir Francis Bacon, this is another part that I forgot to mention, he was also fluent in the same exact languages as Sarah.
Wow.
Very fluent. As a matter of fact, he was so fluent in Latin that he thought in Latin mostly. When he was thinking to himself, he was thinking to himself in Latin. And that's why Sarah kind of felt that she was, I don't know this for sure, but he's intimating that she felt that she was the reincarnation of Sir Francis Bacon because she had so many similarities such as that.
Yeah, she was definitely a child prodigy.
Yes, she definitely was. She was very remarkable, very intelligent. And then all of a sudden she got this huge fortune, she was able to follow all of this all that she wanted to and build what she wanted to.
Yeah. Kind of makes you wonder, what if the situations had to be different? She probably could have been like a different version, like a reincarnated Francis Bacon version of Ada Lovelace.
Yeah.
If environments had been set up.
Well, sure. And if her baby had never died and her husband hadn't died 15 years later, and she would have had some more kids, and maybe she would have just been happy and we would have never known any of this. She would have just been a, you know, having a family and been content, and none of this of her interest would have come out like this. So, but she may have been a happier person too. So,
yeah.
Okay, Charlotte. Well, I want to thank you very much for suggesting this and co-hosting this topic with me. I think it's turned out to be a very fun topic to cover.
I would definitely agree. And I'd just like to thank you again for having me on the show.
Oh, so thank you. I think you do an excellent job, and I enjoy very much talking with you about these sorts of topics. Oh, so thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, well, for more on this topic and others, you can go to our website, mysterioustopics.com. And thank you all for listening. And again, thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
And goodbye.
Goodbye.